Predictions are dangerous.
We absolutely need more inventory.
The Fed doesn't actually have a lot of tools to regulate inflation.
That cash is dried up.
Wow, is my first thought, Bruce.
If both parties don't win, it doesn't happen.
The Real Look. Trending news.
G'day. Today's Wednesday, March 27th. I'm Bruce Hardy.
And I'm Chase Williams.
And this is the news you need to know. Well, Chase, more than 90 real estate brokerages would not be covered under the $418 million settlement agreement the National Association of Realtors reached with the plaintiffs in major antitrust commission suits nationwide, though most do have the option of buying into the deal. Now, the proposed settlement, which has not yet received final approval from the court, would settle claims from a case known as Sitzer Burnett, as we've talked many, many times on this podcast, as well as others against NAR for more than 1 million or about two-thirds of its members. It also includes all state and local realtor organizations, all multiple listing services owned by realtor associations, and all brokerages with an NAR member as principal that had a residential transaction volume in 2022 of $2 billion or less. Now, that's per the T360 Real Estate Almanac. The plaintiffs, I love this quote from Michael Ketchmark of Ketchmark and McCrate, who was the lead counsel for Sitzer Burnett. He said the plaintiffs still wanted bigger companies to pay their share, according to him. And the focus is on the large corporate real estate brokers. He said that that seems to be the logical place for the cutoff. The biggest thing that they need to agree to these practice changes, and they need to agree to change the way that they're doing things. Chase, thoughts about this?
Well, first of all, Bruce, I apologize for my voice today. You, those who have heard me before know that I'm a little hoarse, but I have a couple thoughts. One is, if I ever get out of real estate entirely, which I cannot imagine happening, I want to come back as the person who writes these titles for these articles.
Right.
Who's out? Right. And then, of course, most of them will be in, and that's what you read in the article. I think it's funny, Bruce, because if you're reading between the lines of what Ketchmark's saying, what he's really saying is we want to make sure they pay their fair share. Right. And of course, you have the language like large corporate real estate brokerages, as if it's like demonizing the size of these companies. Right. But it really comes back to money.
Yeah.
It comes back to who's covered under this, and then what are the ways for the others to get in order to pay their fair share. And it looks like there's going to be two primary options for those companies not covered, and we can talk about what those are. I just think it's really exposing what the root of why this all happened in the first place, and that is money.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and you see in lawsuits, Chase, I mean, typically if somebody's going to sue, they sue everybody. Really what they're focused on is the deepest pockets. You know, this is just a business decision on their part to go after the big players and say, no, we want to get more from them because we think we can. And we're going to squeeze them a little harder. There's no doubt. And of course, one of the challenges for these companies, Chase, is that a lot of them are publicly traded.
Yeah.
You know, they have a responsibility to protect their shareholders, and consequently, entering into a settlement is going to be one of the ways that they get to do that.
Yeah, there's two kind of primary options that these companies can opt in, right? And let's cover those briefly. Option one is that within 120 days after the NAR settlement is preliminarily approved by the court, which it hasn't been yet, then the company can deposit into an escrow account an amount equal to 0.0025 multiplied by their volume, their annual volume. Add reference to that, a $2 billion average annual volume brokerage would be required to deposit $5 million, right? Based on that mathematical equation. That's option one. So they can opt in, still pay, and we'll calculate how much you need to pay based on your volume. Option two is if they feel like in good faith that they can't come up with the money required based on that calculation, then they can participate in non-binding mediation with the attorneys, the plaintiff's attorneys, within 110 days, and they would work towards a settlement, and that would be at the brokerage's cost, right? All the fees associated with that mediation. I find it hard to believe that not all of these companies would take one of those options to make sure that themselves and their agents are covered. It'll be interesting to see how many are able to take option one and how many have to go with option two because they feel unable to pay. hate to be exposed that way, but I'm assuming that some are going to end up in option two.
Yeah. Well, and Ketchmark said every single day, brokerages are reaching out to us and setting up mediations and reaching resolutions in these cases. Asked how many brokerages have reached out, saying they want to buy in, Ketchmark said he wasn't able to share details. However, he said, my phone is ringing off the hook is all I can say. Quite a few of these companies are publicly traded, so there's SEC regulations that are in place that govern what I can and can't say. And there's federal rules in the court system that govern what I can and can't say. You know, it'll be interesting. I'm being a little cynical here, but, you know, I'm wondering if he can fit these mediations in around appointments to design his new yacht. Because, you know, we're talking yacht money now.
Yeah, well, it's also funny how his phone is ringing off the hook, and yet he has time to be in the news pretty much every single week with these quotes, right? So just a little rub there, if you ask me. I want to read a little bit about what this article states around some of the proposed changes. We talked a little bit about this in our last news because none of them are approved yet, but we have some guidance and they're likely to be somewhat similar. Brokers would be required to work with buyers to enter into written buyer representation agreements before touring homes. That's a change. And could still negotiate. Still negotiate. That indicates we've always been able to negotiate, which is true. Mm-hmm. Pay via fixed fee commissions paid directly by consumers. That was an option before too, just not common. Concessions from sellers, right? That's getting paid from the seller, which is how we've been paid in the past. Or a portion of the listing broker's compensation. We've also been paid like that before. Although there's some changes here, it's actually smaller changes, I believe, than some of us are giving it credence, right? So we're still going to be paid in a lot of the same ways we were. Exactly how that happens and where we find the information is likely to change. And so I think a lot of the fear that's out there is that this is somehow going to be some dramatic changes. But when you read through what's proposed, although there are changes, and it's important we understand those, I don't feel they're dramatic in any way, right? They're important, but they're not dramatic. Just my opinion.
Well, you know, we'll have new rules. And the key is we have to play this game by the rules. But the rules don't tell you how to win the game. You know, strategy is how you win the game. And this is not the first major change that we've seen in our industry, right? And we've talked about this previously. I mean, back prior to 1993, when there was no such thing as buyer agency. In fact, all realtors were sub-agents of the seller. You know, I remember too, Chase, when the internet came into play, the MLSs sort of went online and we did away with MLS book. So we used to receive all the listings printed out in a book every week. By the way, when we received that book, it was already out of date, right? Immediately. And I remember realtors just freaking out the fact that we were going away from the book. I think this is a time for us to keep a cool head. Certainly the powers that be, our leaders in our company, for example, went forth and negotiated a settlement. We as realtors can focus on what we do best, which is serve our clients.
Yeah, there's this underlying concern that maybe there's been some steering happening, if you will, by real estate agents. I think there's more concern now, whether it's true or not, that they'll actually be steering from the consumer based on, right, how this is going to play out. So we'll see if that happens or not, Bruce. Ultimately, the consumer will always get what they want, given enough time. And it's always been our goal, nor have we done anything to not play by the rules, to make sure that the consumer is well cared for. So lawyers are going to get a lot of money. We're going to get a few changes, and we're still going to go forth and deliver amazing service and win, right? That's how I feel about it.
Well, Chase, breaking news. In light of our first story, 1 week after the NAR settlement was announced, Compass has now also agreed to settle in its commission lawsuits for a total of $57.5 million per a recent filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which just came out today as of recording. Now, in total, the industry has now racked up about $684 million in settlements for these antitrust cases that claim commissions were kept artificially high. Now, if the remaining brokerages that have not yet settled do not reach their own deals, as we mentioned in the previous story, they may join NAR's settlement by paying into the settlement fund through a formula based on their sales volume. The SEC filing states that 50% of the settlement that Compass has agreed to will be deposited into a settlement fund within 30 days of the court's preliminary approval of the agreement, which is expected to come in Q2 of 2024. Compass would pay the remaining amount within 1 year of the court's preliminary approval. So what thinks you of this, Chase?
Well, a couple things. One is it states in the article that brokerages and agents would be prohibited from sorting listings by offer of compensation unless requested by the client. That goes back to what I said before. There's a little question mark around whether clients will actually steer to what properties they want to look at now based on compensation in some regard versus before is based on what the kitchen looks like, how big the backyard is, and the overall price of the property. We'll see if that happens. It's a little loose verbiage in terms of which properties the client wants to go and look at. Another thing of note, Bruce, is that as of Q4 2023 earnings, Compass had $166.9 million available in cash or cash equivalents. A settlement of $57.5 million is roughly one-third of all their available cash. I don't know exactly how that'll impact Compass's stock price and or how they go forward and their investors, but that is a healthy portion of their available cash. And I'm going to assume, not to throw Compass under the bus, that settlements of this size is a healthy portion of anyone's cash because these are not small amounts.
Yeah, absolutely. They're looking to take one third of Compass's cash and then they take one third of the settlement. Is that how that works?
Wonder if the plaintiffs had the opportunity to negotiate those fees that the attorneys are receiving. My guess is not.
Well, Chase, you know, if you look at the formula NAR negotiated, that any firm does more than $2 billion in sales would pay that 0.0025%, which equivalent to $5 million. Based on Compass's sales, that formula would be $460 million. This is actually smart on Compass's part because, quite frankly, they're getting off relatively cheap in comparison to what they would have to do if they didn't go and do this.
Yeah, and you would anticipate that being the case. Generally speaking, that's why you settle, right? You don't pay the full amount. You settle on a lower amount. One of the things that I wanted to also point out in this story, Bruce, is it says the lawsuits and settlements are poised to have far-reaching consequences across the industry. I think language like that is what, you know, causes concern and fear for people. But there's a difference between far-reaching, meaning that these changes are going to be spread across the entire industry. That's why everyone's going to opt in. Versus meaningful or dramatic change. That's not the same thing. The fact that it will touch everything, sure. The fact that it changes everything dramatically, not so fast. I don't really believe that's going to be the case here. So I'm just saying that again, reiterating that to our listeners. Pay attention to what's happening because it's important, but stay calm and don't freak out because a lot of what is proposed are small, minor changes in essence that we'll just get used to, not we have to totally rethink how we do everything. It's not really one of those situations.
Well, Chase, some good news. Finally, existing home sales climbed in February, and that's according to the National Association of Realtors. Among the four major U.S. regions, sales jumped in the West, which is where we are, South, and the Midwest. However, they were unchanged in the Northeast. However, year-over-year sales declined in all regions. Now, total existing home sales bounced 9.5% from January to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 4.38 million in February. Now, year-over-year sales, however, slid 3.3%, so down from 4.53 million in February of 23. So what are your thoughts about this?
Well, I think, Bruce, that when we think about the true trends of what's happening in the industry, we see overall existing home sales down year over year in every region, right? So when we say they went up, we mean from January to February, but they're actually down compared to last February, and they're down 3.3%, right? As mentioned, down in all regions, in all areas, year over year. In terms of median home price, that's actually up 5.7% year over year. Sales are down, prices are up, and from an inventory perspective, they ticked up to 2.9 months of supply, but in essence, that's pretty flat from where it was a year ago. It's up a little bit, but it's really flat and still well under, 3 months of inventory, which is hardly any at all. So there's some things that are relatively unchanged. You got units down and prices up.
Well, and I think too, Chase, we would expect to see units go up as we move into the spring market, right? I mean, that's the typical seasonal flow of real estate.
Right.
It's interesting because, yeah, there's a lot of pundits out there that would say, you know, it's going to rebound this year and we're going to go. But what we're seeing here is more of the same, right? So what we had last year is likely to be a similar story this year as we go forward. I thought what was interesting was first-time homebuyers were responsible for 26% of the sales in February, and that's down from 28% in January, which, by the way, would speak to what you were saying there, Chase, about prices going up. And by the way, it was 27% in February of 2023. I think this is fascinating. All cash sales accounted for 33% of transactions in February, and that's up from 32% in January and up from 28% 1 year ago. We had the opportunity to sit in on Gary's vision speech and state of the market. What he shared was that in high net worth individuals are actually moving more money out of the stock market into cash. And it would seem that some of that cash is ending up in real estate.
Yeah, you go from paper assets to hard assets, right? If you think about that, and ultimately the stock market's had an amazing run up. So the smart investor says, oh, it might be time to take some off the table over here, way up, and move it into something like real estate. And so we're seeing that, you know, a full third of all transactions being all cash in February. That's a big deal. One more thing to note, and that's distressed sales. Short sales or REOs, foreclosures, in other words, represented 3% of sales in February, which is virtually unchanged both from last month and last February. So I point that out because as an industry, we want to understand that this time is not like last time, if you will, when we think of the Great Recession as it pertains specifically here to distressed sales. There's so much equity that exists out there in the market, and there's so many new programs that are available for people to get forbearance or stay in their homes that we don't believe there's a flood of distressed sales that are coming. And so that will have an impact on the market or lack of an input on the market. So we want to be aware of that.
Well, that's the news you need to know. Don't miss this Friday's Northern Lights episode where we'll interview Kim Randolph Meany with KW Columbia Basin in Kennewick, Washington, in the Tri-Cities area. Thanks again for tuning in with us on The Real Look.
This podcast is produced by Marissa Frost. Visit kwnwr.com to access the show notes from today's episode. Head over to Apple, Google, or Spotify, or really any major streaming platform to subscribe, and don't forget to leave us a review. Thanks again for listening to The Real Look.